Welcome, Curious Minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're taking a deep plunge into a company that touches many of our daily lives, often without us even realizing it. We've compiled a comprehensive stack of sources, including a detailed investment research report, all focused on Alimentation Couche-Tard Inc., or Couche-Tard, as it's, you know, more commonly known, a true global leader in the convenience and mobility sector. Our mission for you today is to, well, unpack this mountain of information, extract the most important nuggets, and get you a shortcut to truly understanding this business. We're going to explore how a company primarily known for its fuel pumps is rapidly transforming itself into a food and convenience powerhouse.
Right.
And what that bold strategic pivot means for its future and for you, the customer.
Yeah, what's truly fascinating here is that Couche-Tard is at a critical juncture. Really, this deep dive will illuminate their ambitious strategic pivot, balancing their established strengths with the undeniable challenges of a rapidly changing world. Mm. We'll look at the core numbers, the forward-looking strategy, and, you know, the management team that's navigating it all.
So whether you're simply curious about how these massive companies operate or you're looking for insights into the evolving retail landscape, get ready. Let's unpack this. Unpacking the convenience colossus. Alimentation Couche-Tard at a glance. Okay, so to kick things off, let's set the stage. Who exactly is Alimentation Couche-Tard? This isn't just, you know, another gas station chain. It's a global giant that feels almost ubiquitous sometimes. Can you tell us a bit about its origins and how it reached such incredible global scale?
It's quite an amazing story of growth, actually. Founded in Quebec, Canada, back in 1980, it began as just a single convenience store.
Really? Just one?
Just one. From those humble beginnings, it expanded both organically and through a relentless series of acquisitions, really, to become a global leader. Today, it operates approximately 16,700 stores across 31 countries and territories under well-known banners like Couche-Tard, Circle K, and Holiday Station stores.
Wow.
And to give you a sense of its sheer scale, it employs around 149,000 people worldwide.
That's huge.
That's a massive workforce supporting its daily operations.
That's an incredible journey from a single store. With such a vast, diversified network, how is it actually structured? I mean, how do they manage all that, maintaining efficiency and brand consistency across so many different markets and cultures?
Well, their network is predominantly company-operated over 14,500 sites, to be precise.
Okay.
This direct ownership model gives them crucial control over operations, branding, product assortment, and the strategic rollouts of critical initiatives, like their Fresh Food Fast program, which we'll talk about.
Right.
This level of centralized control is vital for maintaining quality and implementing system-wide changes effectively, you know, ensuring a consistent customer experience. Beyond that, they also operate over 2,100 licensed Circle K stores, particularly in regions like Asia and the Middle East. This licensing model is actually brilliant. It's a low-risk way for them to expand their brand internationally and generate high-margin royalty income without significant capital investment. Yeah. And a key to their operational agility is a decentralized management structure. Regional leaders are empowered to tailor offerings to local tastes and market conditions.
Makes sense.
This approach fosters an entrepreneurial culture and allows for agile and efficient integration of acquired businesses, which, as we'll see, is absolutely critical to their growth strategy.
So we have a sense of their sheer size and global reach. But let's get down to brass tacks. Where does Couche-Tard actually make its money? Most people, myself included, think of convenience stores as places to fill up on gas. But is that where the real profit is for them?
That's a crucial question, and the answer is often counterintuitive. While road transportation fuel sales accounted for a whopping 74% of total revenues in their fiscal year 2024.
74%, okay.
Yeah, huge chunk of revenue.
Yeah.
But they contributed only about 48% of total gross profit.
Only 48%, that's a big difference.
Exactly. This stark difference highlights the high-volume, low-margin nature of the fuel business. It's about moving a lot of product. But the profit per gallon isn't huge. Think of it more as a necessary traffic driver rather than a primary profit center.
That's a surprising split. So if fuel isn't the primary profit engine, what is their secret? Where does the bulk of the profit actually come from then?
Well, the significant disparity between revenue and gross profit contributions is absolutely key to understanding their business model. Merchandise and services, which includes everything from tobacco products and beverages to fresh food, snacks, and car washes, made up only 25% of FY 2024 revenues.
Okay, just a quarter of the revenue.
Right. But here's the kicker. They generated approximately 52% of total gross profit.
Wow, so more than half the profit from less than a quarter of the sales.
Precisely. This is their primary profit engine. The core model, what they cleverly call the profit-in-the-box model.
Right, I've heard that term.
Is leveraging those fuel sales to drive high-frequency customer traffic into their highly profitable in-store offerings. The real genius here isn't just selling gas. It's turning those quick fuel stops into a highly profitable shopping trip inside the store. They're masters of monetizing convenience.
It's fascinating how they use the fuel pump as a customer magnet for those higher margin in-store sales. And the data really drives this home. They even have information suggesting 80% of in-store merchandise is consumed within 1 hour of purchase, which really reinforces that extreme convenience focus for the customer.
Indeed. This strategic focus on convenience is directly reflected in their mission statement. To make our customers' lives a little easier every day.
It's about being there quickly with what you need when you need it and ensuring that experience is as seamless as possible.
With such a vast global network, how does their geographic footprint impact their overall business and risk profile? Are they diversified enough to, say, weather regional economic storms? Yeah, their global diversification is indeed a major strength. It strategically mitigates risk from regional economic downturns or specific market challenges. In FY 2024, 63% of their gross profit came from the United States.
Okay, the bulk of it.
0.25% from Europe and other regions, and 12% from Canada. They're not just spread out, they're deeply embedded, operating in 46 of the 50 U.S. states and holding leading market shares in numerous countries across Scandinavia, the Baltics, Ireland, and Poland.
Right.
This broad base means if one market faces a slump, others can help cushion the impact, providing a powerful buffer.
Speaking of international presence, how significant was that recent acquisition of Total Energy's European assets for their European strategy? What did that deal specifically unlock for them?
Oh, that deal was genuinely transformative. It significantly expands their reach into Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg.
Key market.
Giving them a strong foothold in some of Europe's largest economies. This not only solidifies their position as a truly global player, but also adds crucial density to their existing European operations, enhancing supply chain efficiencies and brand recognition in those markets. It's a real game changer for their non-North American presence. Two, the industry and Couche-Tard's competitive edge, navigating the tides of change.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. The convenience store industry isn't static. It's actually undergoing some massive shifts right now. What are the big trends reshaping this landscape that Couche-Tard and all its competitors have to contend with? How is it changing the game for them?
That's an important question because the structural changes are significant. The U.S. market, despite the presence of giants like Couche-Tard, is still highly fragmented.
Really? Even with Circle K everywhere?
Yeah. Couche-Tard itself, despite its immense size, holds only about a 5% market share in the U.S.
Only 5%? Wow.
So this fragmentation is itself a huge ongoing opportunity for consolidation. Many smaller independent operators simply lack the scale, the capital, or the technological sophistication to compete effectively in this evolving environment, making them prime acquisition targets for larger, well-capitalized players like Couche-Tard.
So consolidation is a big theme. What are the broader consumer and technological trends affecting everyone in the industry, beyond just who's buying whom?
Well, the most significant trend is undoubtedly the rise of food service. It has now actually surpassed tobacco as the largest in-store sales category for the convenience industry as a whole.
No kidding. Bigger than tobacco now.
Bigger than tobacco. This means convenience stores are increasingly competing directly with quick service restaurants, QSRs.
Right, like McDonald's or Subway.
Exactly. Attracting new customer demographics who are looking for more than just a prepackaged snack. This shift is driving higher margin sales and fundamentally changing the very perception of what a convenience store offers.
So it's not just about a hot dog roller anymore.
Definitely not.
But actual prepared foods, maybe even customized orders. That's a huge operational change for many.
It is.
What about technology? How is that shaping things for these businesses?
Tech integration is also vital, both for enhancing the customer experience and improving operational efficiency. Retailers are investing heavily in sophisticated loyalty programs to drive repeat business.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile apps for ordering and payment to streamline transactions, and self-checkout solutions to reduce labor costs and wait times. Especially, you know, as labor markets remain tight, these innovations are critical for staying competitive.
And then there's the elephant in the room for any fuel-centric business.
Yeah.
Electric vehicles, EVs, this isn't just a trend, it feels like a long-term structural shift. How is the EV transition impacting the convenience industry and specifically Couche-Tard's core business?
Yeah, the EV transition is the most profound long-term structural challenge, no doubt about it. While the pace of adoption varies globally, Europe's generally ahead of North America, the eventual decline in gasoline demand poses a fundamental threat to their primary traffic driver. You know, the very reason many customers pull into a convenience store in the first place.
The main draw.
Exactly. This forces operators to profoundly rethink their forecourt strategy, investing heavily in EV charging infrastructure. This also necessitates redesigning the in-store experience, because customers charging an EV will have significantly longer dwell times at the store compared to a quick gas fill-up.
More time to spend money inside?
Potentially. And what's compelling here is that the significant capital investment needed for high-speed charging stations might actually accelerate industry consolidation. Many smaller independent operators simply won't have the capital to make these necessary investments.
Ah, so it favors the big guys.
It favors the well-capitalized players like Couche-Tard who can afford to build out these new networks and redefine that customer experience.
So who are Couche-Tard's main rivals in this evolving landscape? And what gives them their unique competitive advantage, their moat, as people say, that sets them apart?
Well, they compete against a diverse set of players.
Mm-hmm.
Direct rivals include global players like 7-Eleven, owned by the Japanese conglomerate 7&I Holdings. And in the U.S., regional powerhouses like Casey's General Stores, Wawa, and Sheetz. Those guys are particularly strong in food service.
Yeah, Wawa and Sheetz especially have almost a cult following for their food.
They really do. But the competitive set is broadening. It includes QSRs, coffee shops, dollar stores, grocery stores, all increasingly offering convenience-oriented products and services. It's a crowded market.
Given that crowded market, what makes Couche-Tard special? What's their enduring moat, that protective barrier around their business that makes them so tough to beat?
Their primary competitive moat is massive scale, just sheer size.
Okay.
This gives them immense purchasing power, allowing them to procure fuel and merchandise globally with significant cost advantages over smaller competitors. They also benefit from logistical efficiency through a sophisticated global supply chain that optimizes fuel sourcing and in-store product distribution.
Crucial for margins.
Absolutely critical. And furthermore, their investment-grade credit rating gives them access to cheaper capital, which is a huge advantage in a capital-intensive, acquisition-driven industry where the cost of funding growth can make or break a deal.
And their track record, right? Successfully buying and integrating other chains, that M&A machine sounds pretty formidable and a tough act for competitors to follow.
It absolutely is. Their proven ability to identify, acquire, and then seamlessly integrate diverse businesses, realizing significant synergies. That's a core competency that is incredibly difficult for competitors to replicate. It's been the engine of their impressive growth and a cornerstone of their competitive advantage for years.
Let's dig a bit more into the EV challenge. It's clearly a long-term threat, as you said. How are they actively addressing this? What's their strategic approach to future-proofing their business against declining gasoline demand?
They're being quite proactive, actually. They're leveraging their strong European presence, where EV penetration is highest, as a kind of laboratory for their e-mobility strategy.
Testing ground.
Exactly. As of 2024, their European network already included over 2,600 EV charging points, even including chargers designed for heavy trucks, which indicates a pretty comprehensive approach to future mobility. This lets them test different models, learn best practices for what will eventually come to other markets, and lets them get ahead of the curve.
And what's the North American strategy for EVs, given that adoption is at a different stage here compared to Europe?
Well, it's in earlier stages, but it follows the same logical blueprint they're testing in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Build out a network of fast chargers to capture the next generation of mobility customers.
Okay.
And crucially, once those customers are charging, they aim to convert those significantly longer charging dwell times into higher margin in-store sales of food and beverages. The strategy is basically to turn a potential threat into a new revenue opportunity by changing the reason customers visit their stores. 3. Financial health check. A 5-year snapshot of performance.
Okay. Let's dive into the numbers. We've got a 5-year financial summary here from fiscal 2020 to 2024. Looking at the total revenue line, it seems to jump around quite a bit. What's going on there? Is that a sign of instability in the business?
Not necessarily instability. Couche-Tard's total revenue is heavily influenced by the volatility of global fuel prices.
It's the price of gas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it can give a misleading impression. The sharp decline in revenue in FY 2021 to $45.8 billion, for example. That was primarily a result of the dramatic collapse in fuel prices and volumes during the initial phase of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Right. Nobody was driving.
Pretty much. Then the subsequent rebound to a peak of $71.9 billion in FY 2023 was driven by the recovery and then the surge in fuel prices. This inherent volatility underscores why top-line revenue isn't always the most reliable indicator of the company's underlying operational health or the strength of their core, in-store business.
That makes sense. So if total revenue isn't the clearest indicator because of fuel prices, how do we get a clearer picture of their core business strength? What metric gives us a better read?
A far more insightful metric is same-store merchandise revenue growth.
Okay. See that again?
Same-store merchandise revenue growth. This metric strips out the effects of both fuel price changes and new store openings. So it gives you a pure read on how well their existing stores are performing in terms of selling those higher margin items inside.
Got it. How's that looked?
Well, the company demonstrated remarkable strength during the pandemic, actually. Same store merchandise revenues increased 5.6% in the U.S., 6.1% in Europe, and an impressive 9.5% in Canada in FY 2021.
Even during COVID?
Wow.
Yeah, largely driven by consumers consolidating shopping trips and increasing their basket sizes at convenience stores. While performance has since normalized recent quarters, showing modest declines in the U.S. against tough prior year, comparisons continued positive growth in Canada and Europe highlights the benefits of their geographic diversification. Different regions, different dynamics.
That clarifies it perfectly. What about their profitability and margins? Are they holding up, or is that fuel volatility eating into their earnings?
Their profitability has been remarkably robust and consistent, actually. Gross margins on merchandise are stable and high, typically ranging from 33% to 35% in the U.S. and even higher in Europe.
Pretty healthy margins.
Very healthy. And what's fascinating here is how they've effectively used their scale and sophisticated supply chain expertise to manage fuel margins. While per unit fuel margins are inherently lower, they remain healthy and, perhaps surprisingly, have even expanded during periods of crude oil price volatility. It demonstrates their ability to capture value in a challenging market through astute management and likely hedging.
So
net earnings attributable to shareholders have shown a strong upward trend over the five-year period we're looking at.
Yeah.
They grew from $2.4 billion in FY 2020 to a peak of $3.1 billion in FY 2023, before moderating slightly to $2.7 billion in FY 2024. The performance during the pandemic in FY 2021 was particularly noteworthy, despite a significant 15.5% drop in total revenue.
Right, which we talked about.
.net earnings actually increased by a substantial 15.0%.
Increased? Even with lower revenue, how does that work?
It's that counterintuitive result again. It powerfully demonstrates the exceptional resilience of their business model. Expanding fuel margins, thanks to their astute management, and strong in-store merchandise sales can more than offset lower fuel volumes and prices. It provides a stable and reliable earnings base.
Generating profit is one thing, but how effectively are they using the capital they invest to generate those profits? Are they getting a good return on their money? That's key for long-term growth, right?
Absolutely key. And Couche-Tard has a long history of generating high returns on capital, which is a hallmark of a disciplined and efficient operator. Return on equity, ROE, a measure of profit relative to shareholder equity, has consistently been strong, averaging over 22% during this five-year period.
22% ROE? That's pretty solid.
Very solid. It indicates strong value creation for shareholders. Return on invested capital, ROIC, which is a critical measure of how effectively the company deploys capital into its operations and acquisitions, has also been impressive, peaking at 17.5%. in FY 2023.
Okay.
The slight decline in both ROE and ROIC in FY 2024 is largely attributable to that massive Total Energies acquisition. It added significant capital to their balance sheet late in the fiscal year before its full earnings potential and associated synergies could be realized.
Ah, if it's a temporary dip due to a major strategic investment, not a fundamental flaw.
Exactly. Not a flaw in their capital discipline.
That makes sense. What about cash flow, often called the lifeblood of a company? And their overall balance sheet. Are they fiscally sound and flexible, especially with such an active acquisition strategy?
Strong and predictable free cash flow generation is really a cornerstone of Couche-Tard's financial profile. This robust cash flow provides the essential resources to fund their ambitious acquisition strategy, which we'll discuss more, and to consistently return capital to shareholders. They maintain an investment-grade credit rating, which allows them to borrow at favorable rates.
Important.
And they have a well-established pattern of increasing leverage to fund major acquisitions and then rapidly de-levering using their strong operating cash flows. This strategic use of debt, taking it on then quickly paying it down, is a key part of their growth engine.
So they take on debt for a big acquisition, but then quickly pay it down rather than letting it linger on the balance sheet for years. That sounds like a disciplined approach.
Precisely. This is a key aspect of their financial discipline. The net debt to EBITDA ratio, which measures their debt load relative to their earnings power, fell from 1.60x in FY 2020 to a very conservative 0.88x by the end of FY 2023.
Pretty low.
Very low. While an increase to 2.21x at the end of FY 2024, due to the debt incurred to finance the Total Energies acquisition.
Right, that big deal again.
This level remains well within the company's historical operating range. It demonstrates their financial flexibility and their ability to strategically use debt without becoming overextended before then working to pay it down efficiently. 4. The road ahead. Strategic growth and ambitious initiatives.
All right, looking forward, Keechtard isn't just reacting to trends, it sounds like. They have a very clear, ambitious strategy called 10 for the Win. Can you tell us about it? What does it mean for the company's future direction and overall growth profile?
Yeah, this is their big strategic roadmap. Uh-huh. This comprehensive plan, announced publicly in October 2023, sets an ambitious financial target. To grow the company's adjusted EBITDA from $5.8 billion in FY 2023 to a remarkable $10 billion by FY 2028.
$10 billion. Wow, that's a huge jump in just 5 years. Almost double.
It is. An ambitious $4.2 billion increase. It clearly signals a more balanced and comprehensive approach to growth, incorporating various levers beyond just traditional acquisitions, aiming to transform the business model significantly.
That's a huge target. How are they planning to achieve that $10 billion? What are the key drivers that contribute to such a significant increase? What does that tell us about their future strategy?
Well, they've broken down that projected $4.2 billion increase in EBITDA into several specific components. Approximately $1.8 billion is expected to come from mergers and acquisitions.
Still a big chunk from M&A.
Still a big chunk. That includes $700 million from the recent Total Energies deal and another $1.1 billion from new opportunities they plan to pursue. Another significant piece, $800 million, is targeted from cost efficiencies under a program they call Fit to Serve, basically streamlining operations.
Okay, cost cutting.
And then approximately $800 million is projected from organic growth initiatives, specifically winning in categories like fresh food, expanding their beverage offerings, growing their private brands, and strengthening customer loyalty programs.
That's a big focus on growing from within.
It is. Fuel initiatives are expected to contribute $450 million. And finally, network growth, meaning new store builds, is projected to add $400 million. What's truly insightful about this plan is that strategic rebalancing. It signals a move beyond just being an M&A machine.
Right.
To building a more self-sufficient, resilient business driven by internal improvements and organic initiatives alongside smart acquisitions.
Acquisitions have clearly been a major part of their story, the M&A machine, as we keep calling it. How central is M&A to their future growth under this new plan? And how do they make it work so successfully year after year when so many companies struggle with integrations?
M&A remains absolutely at the heart of Couche-Tard's value creation model. It's in their DNA. The company is a proven consolidator with a highly disciplined process for identifying, acquiring, and then, most importantly, seamlessly integrating businesses. They consistently target significant synergies from these acquisitions. Think of it this way. When they buy a company, they don't just add its existing profits. They're so good at integrating that they can often boost that new company's annual operating profit by 30% to 60% within a few years.
30 to 60%, that's huge.
It is. It essentially makes the acquisition far more valuable than it first appears. This M&A machine has historically been the engine of their growth and value creation, and it's projected to remain a major contributor to the 10 for the Win plan.
And the Total Energies deal, which you mentioned contributes $700 million to that plan, is massive in scale and impact. How critical is unlocking those synergies?
Absolutely critical. The acquisition of those 2,200 sites from Total Energies across Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg closed in January 2024 for about $3.1 billion. This deal is truly transformative for Couche-Tard's European presence. Established as a strong foothold in some of Europe's largest economies, they have an ambitious target to unlock about $187 million in annual synergies from this acquisition over the next 5 years.
Okay.
That will be a key focus for management to realize, as it will significantly contribute to their 10 for the Win target.
They're also targeting food-centric chains specifically, right? Like
yeah.
Get-Go Cafe Plus Market. This seems to align perfectly with their organic growth push towards food service.
Yes, exactly. That's a great example. These types of acquisitions aren't just about adding stores or increasing footprint. They're strategically about acquiring talent, established supply chains, and critical operational expertise, specifically in food service.
So buying know-how.
Precisely. This accelerates the company's own organic food initiatives across its broader network. It allows them to rapidly scale up their Fresh Food Fast program by integrating established best practices and capabilities rather than, you know, building everything from scratch.
Beyond acquisitions, what are they doing to grow organically from within their existing operations and build loyalty? What initiatives are they focusing on to get more customers spending more in those high margin areas?
Under the 10 for the win framework, they're aggressively pursuing several organic growth levers to enhance that in-store profitability. The Fresh Food Fast program is a top priority, aiming to establish a best-in-class convenient food offering across its network. The program is now active in over 5,800 locations globally. That's a testament to its widespread rollout.
Pretty fast rollout.
Yeah. The strategic goal here is to significantly elevate food sales in North America, where it currently accounts for about 11% of sales. Closer to the 20-25% benchmark they've already achieved in their successful European operations.
Big gap to close there.
Big gap. Big opportunity. They are also substantially expanding their private label portfolio, offering everything from wine to snacks to provide greater value for customers and capture higher margins for the company.
And digital initiatives, particularly loyalty programs, seem to be a big focus for retaining customers and driving repeat business. How are they rolling that out?
Indeed. A cornerstone of their customer strategy is the rollout of the Inner Circle Loyalty Program in the United States. Launched in 2023, this free program provides valuable fuel and food rewards and, crucially, enables personalized marketing through sophisticated data analytics.
So they get data too.
They get valuable data. As of mid-2024, the program was active in over 4,000 stores with more than 6 million enrolled members, demonstrating rapid adoption and its potential for deep customer engagement and insights, helping them understand and serve their customers better.
So they're not just buying existing stores, they're also building brand new ones from the ground up to support growth.
Yes, they have an ambition to build 500 new stores over a five-year period.
500 new builds.
Yeah. This organic network growth strategy supplements their acquisition strategy. It allows them to fill in market gaps and establish new, modern locations designed with their latest convenience concepts, often in prime locations where they see high growth potential.
We touched on their global footprint, but are they looking to expand into completely new regions beyond North America and Europe in the long term? Or is it more about densifying existing markets?
Well, the primary focus for consolidation remains the fragmented U.S. market and strengthening their European foothold, especially after the Total deal. But CouchCard maintains a long-term ambition for further international expansion, particularly with an eye toward Asia as a future growth market. They are always evaluating global opportunities.
And the attempted acquisition of 7-Eleven's parent company, 7&I Holdings, for a reported $47 billion.
Huge number.
Really signals the scale of that ambition, even though it ultimately didn't proceed. That was a huge statement of intent.
It absolutely does. That bold, albeit abandoned, bid underscores management's confidence and willingness to pursue truly transformative deals that could reshape the global convenience landscape entirely. It shows they're not afraid to think incredibly big when it comes to long-term growth and market dominance. Demonstrates a clear appetite for large-scale value creation, V-capital allocation, and shareholder returns. The flywheel approach.
Okay, let's talk about how they manage their money. How does CouchCard decide where to put its capital? What are its allocation priorities? How do they balance reinvesting for growth with providing returns for shareholders? It seems like a constant balancing act for many companies.
Yeah, it is. And their capital allocation framework is meticulously designed to maximize long-term shareholder value. Their absolute top priority is strategic reinvestment back into the business for growth.
Growth first.
Growth first. This is typically split between mergers and acquisitions, which receives the largest share of capital over time, as has been the main engine of their growth.
Right, the M&A machine.
And organic investments. These organic investments include capital expenditures for new store builds, extensive store remodels, often involving raise and rebuilds of older sites.
Starting fresh.
Exactly. And crucial strategic initiatives like technology upgrades, investments in EV chargers, and the continued rollout of their Fresh Food Fast program. They focus on where the capital can generate the best returns, seeking to grow their asset base and profitability.
And their track record shows they're pretty good at making these capital decisions effectively, generating strong returns on their investments.
Their track record indeed demonstrates a consistently prudent approach to capital allocation, regularly generating strong returns on the capital they employ. This discipline in deploying capital is a hallmark of their management team's effectiveness and is critical to their long-term value creation story.
You mentioned their M&A machine before. What makes them so successful at acquisitions beyond just having capital? Is there a secret sauce to their integration process that allows them to extract so much value?
Well, a key element of the company's success has been its disciplined approach to M&A, which extends far beyond simply buying assets. They have a long history of not only acquiring assets, but also seamlessly integrating their operations, systems, and cultures. That's the hard part.
Right. Integration is tough.
It is. And crucially, they excel at realizing significant cost and revenue synergies. As we discussed, they typically target synergies that range from 30% to 60% of a target's pre-acquisition EBITDA.
Still amazed by that number.
It's a very high bar and a testament to their operational integration capabilities. For example, the 8.0x EBITDA multiple they paid for the Total Energies assets appears quite reasonable for such a strategic entry into major new European markets. It reflects this disciplined valuation approach rather than simply chasing growth at any cost.
So when there aren't big, attractive acquisitions on the table that meet their discipline criteria, what happens to that capital? Do they just sit on it or do they return it to shareholders?
Oh, absolutely they return it. When attractive M&A opportunities are not available at reasonable valuations because they won't overpay, they pivot strategically to returning excess capital to shareholders. They do this through two primary mechanisms. This ensures capital is always working for shareholders rather than sitting idle.
What are those primary mechanisms for returning capital?
First, dividends. CouchTard has a strong and incredibly consistent record of dividend growth. Their dividend increased at a compound annual growth rate of approximately 25% between 2012 and 2022.
25% growth per year. That's impressive.
Very impressive. With a further 26.9% increase in fiscal 2023. The current dividend payout ratio remains modest, providing substantial capacity for future increases without straining their finances. Second, share repurchases. The company maintains a normal course issuer bid, essentially, a buyback program, and actively repurchases its own shares when management believes they represent an attractive investment opportunity.
So they buy back their own stock.
Exactly. This was notably evident after their failed bid for French retailer Carrefour in 2021. They didn't just let the capital sit idle. They quickly initiated significant share buybacks, demonstrating their commitment to not letting excess capital remain unproductive.
So it's like a flywheel effect, as you called it earlier.
Mm.
When M&A opportunities are hot, they direct capital there. When the deal flow slows or valuations aren't attractive, they pivot and return capital to shareholders. It sounds like a very flexible and strategic approach that benefits shareholders regardless of the market conditions.
Precisely. This flexible capital allocation framework ensures that capital is consistently deployed towards activities that enhance shareholder value, whether that's through strategic growth or direct returns. It also effectively helps them avoid deal fever, preventing them from engaging in value-destructive transactions just for the sake of making a deal. It's a hallmark of their long-term disciplined approach that has served them well over decades. Recent developments in leadership, navigating change at the helm.
Let's bring this right up to the present. What have been the most impactful developments for CouchTard in the last couple of years, say, looking specifically at 2023 to 2025? It sounds like a period of significant activity for them.
Oh, absolutely. The most impactful recent development has been the massive acquisition and, crucially, the ongoing integration of the European retail assets from Total Energies. This transaction, adding about 2,200 sites in key markets like Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg, officially closed in January 2024.
Big integration challenge.
Huge. This is a complex, multi-year undertaking, and its successful integration will be a key management focus for realizing those targeted $187 million in annual synergies over the next 5 years. Concurrently, the company continues to optimize its portfolio through smaller strategic transactions, like the divestiture of 35 U.S. stores to Majors Management, likely aimed at streamlining their network or perhaps satisfying regulatory conditions related to larger deals.
The last few years have been tough for many businesses, with persistent inflation, supply chain issues, tight labor markets. How has CouchTard performed in this challenging macroeconomic environment? Have they managed to protect their profitability?
Management has demonstrated remarkably strong operational execution in this challenging environment, actually. Through their Fit to Serve cost efficiency program, a key pillar of their broader 10 for the Win strategy, they've successfully kept their normalized expense growth below the average rate of inflation impacting their business.
Keeping costs down.
Disciplined cost control. It's been absolutely crucial in protecting their operating margins when other companies have really struggled. They've also adeptly managed the significant volatility in fuel prices, while sharp price movements can create headwinds for total revenue figures. Couche-Tard's sophisticated fuel procurement and pricing strategies have allowed it to maintain healthy fuel gross margins. And importantly, they've often captured additional profit during periods of price dislocation.
Turning volatility into opportunity sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Demonstrating their adaptability and strong market intelligence.
A significant leadership transition was announced recently at the very top. Brian Hannisch, a highly successful leader, is stepping down. What does this mean for the company's future? That's a big change.
It is a pivotal development indeed. Brian Hannisch, who led the company through a decade of extraordinary growth, including those transformative acquisitions of CST Brands and State Oil, Fuel, and Retail, is retiring in September 2024. He oversaw an impressive 400% increase in the company's share price during his tenure.
400%?
Yeah, a testament to his impact and strategic foresight. He will remain with the company as a special advisor to ensure a smooth transition, which is a positive sign for continuity and knowledge transfer. Prevents a sudden vacuum at the top.
And his successor, is it an internal hire, or are they bringing in someone new from outside to lead this next phase?
It's an internal promotion. Alex Miller, the current chief operating officer, will succeed him. He's a long-tenured company insider, having been with Couche-Tard for nearly 13 years. Deep experience leading North American operations and the global fuel business.
So someone who knows the business inside out.
Exactly. This internal promotion signals a strong commitment to strategic continuity and reflects a well-planned succession. The timing of this change is particularly noteworthy. Appointing an operations-focused leader like Mr. Miller at a time when the company's primary challenges are the complex integration of the massive Total Energies assets and the detailed execution of those ambitious organic growth initiatives.
Right, the 10 for the Win stuff.
Exactly, within the 10 for the Win plan. It suggests a deliberate strategic shift in focus, perhaps from major deal-making towards meticulous operational execution and optimization.
Beyond individual leaders, what about their overall corporate governance? Is it structured in a way that aligns with shareholder interests and supports long-term growth, or are there aspects that might raise questions?
Well, their governance framework includes a board of directors with a majority of independent members and established committees like audit and human resources and corporate governance.
Yeah.
These oversee financial reporting, executive compensation, succession planning, etc. What's perhaps most interesting here is their dual-class share structure.
Ah, yes. Tell us about that.
The Class A multiple voting shares, primarily held by the four founders, carry 10 votes per share. While the Class B subordinate voting shares, which most people would own, carry one vote per share. Co-founder Alain Bouchard alone controlled approximately 13% of the total shares outstanding as of July 2025, granting him significant influence over shareholder votes and strategic direction.
Okay, so concentrated voting power. Some might see that dual-class structure as a concern for minority shareholders, potentially limiting their influence. What's the other side of that coin? Why might this structure actually be a benefit for Couche-Tard?
That's a fair point. While it can limit minority shareholder influence in certain votes, this structure has arguably been absolutely crucial to their historical success. It has provided the long-term stability and insulation from short-term market pressures that management needed to execute its bold, multi-year acquisition and growth strategies.
So they can think long-term without worrying about quarterly results pressures as much.
Exactly. Without constant external second-guessing from activist investors or market fluctuations, this has allowed them to focus on compounding value over decades. Moreover, they maintain a high level of transparency with investors through detailed quarterly results, regular conference calls with analysts, and comprehensive investor presentations, ensuring investors are well-informed about their strategy and performance, even with the concentrated voting power. 7. Valuation and risk assessment. Weighing the investment case.
All right, let's try to pull this together from an investment perspective or just for understanding its market position. With all this information about their operations, finances, and strategy, how does the market currently value Couche-Tard? Is it cheap, expensive, or somewhere in the middle compared to its own history and its peers?
Well, the analysis suggests it's currently valued at a, let's say, reasonable level. To assess its value, we often look at how the market prices its earnings. Over the past decade, its trailing 12-month price-to-earnings ratio, the TTM PE, has generally been in the 15x to 22x range.
Okay.
With a 10-year average of about 17.6x. As of mid-2025, its TTM PE is approximately 1920x, and its TTM enterprise value to EBITDA is about 11.2x.
So right in the historical ballpark.
Exactly. These figures fall comfortably within its historical bands, suggesting that the market is valuing the company consistently with its past performance and not at an extreme premium or discount right now.
That's helpful for its own historical context. But how does it compare to its direct competitors, like Casey's General Stores, which you mentioned is very strong in food service, or 7-Eleven's parent, 7&I Holdings, given their global reach? Where does Couche-Tard sit in that competitive valuation landscape?
Right. Comparing it to peers is crucial.
Yeah.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, a clear valuation hierarchy emerges among these major players. Couche-Tard currently trades at a significant valuation discount to Casey's General Stores.
Discount to Casey's?
Yes. On both PE, it's around 20.5x versus Casey's 35.7x, and EBITDA multiples around 10.8x versus Casey's 18.4x.
Wow, that's a big gap. Casey's trades much higher.
Much higher. Conversely, Couche-Tard trades at a premium to 7&I Holdings, which has an EBITDA of about 8.1x. So it sits kind of in the middle of these two key competitors valuation-wise.
That's a pretty substantial gap, especially with Casey's. Why the big difference in how the market values them? Considering Couche-Tard's strengths and its own pivot to food, what's the market saying there?
Well, Casey's commands such a significant premium because it has a highly successful and deeply proven food service model. It consistently generates strong margins and is widely seen as sort of the benchmark for the future of the convenience industry.
They've already proven the food model works.
Exactly. The market appears to be rewarding Casey's for its established leadership in this high growth and higher margin area. Couche-Tard's discount, relative to Casey's, suggests that investors are perhaps not yet fully convinced of its own ability to successfully execute its strategic pivot to food service at scale, particularly in North America, and are therefore applying a lower multiple to its more fuel-dependent earnings stream.
So it's a show-me story for Couche-Tard on food.
Exactly. This raises an important question. Should Couche-Tard demonstrate sustained success in its fresh food, fast, and inner circle loyalty initiatives, and consistently prove its food service model in North America, there is significant potential for this valuation gap to narrow. The market is essentially saying Casey's has proven it, so it gets the premium. Couche-Tard is still in the show-me phase with its food pivot. If they succeed, there's a clear path for that gap to close, offering a big opportunity for potential upside.
Makes sense. Now, every business, no matter how strong, has risks. What are the most significant ones for Couche-Tard that investors, or even just curious observers, should be aware of as they look at this company's future?
The most significant risk factor is undoubtedly fuel demand and pricing volatility. The long-term secular decline in demand for road transportation fuel due to the global electric vehicle transition, that poses a fundamental threat to their largest revenue stream and their primary customer traffic driver.
The core reason people stop there.
For many, yes. While they are actively addressing it with their EV charging strategy, the ultimate profitability and traffic-generating potential of this new mobility model are still unproven at a broad scale, particularly in North America. That adds a layer of uncertainty about their long-term core business.
Beyond the EV transition, what other competitive pressures do they face in the convenience retail space? You mentioned it's getting more crowded.
It really is. The convenience retail industry is intensely competitive, and that competition is broadening. Couche-Tard competes not only with other traditional C stores like 7-Eleven, but also with a widening array of retailers. QSRs, grocery stores, dollar stores, even pharmacies.
Everyone wants a piece of that convenience pie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All vying for the same consumer spending on convenient items and prepared foods. It's a constant fight for every customer dollar.
And the regulatory environment. Does that pose specific risks to their business model or profitability, particularly with their product mix, like tobacco?
Definitely. They operate in a highly regulated environment, and that brings significant risks. Key regulatory risks include potential restrictions or increased taxation on tobacco and other nicotine products. These still remain a highly profitable category for them. In FY 2024, these products accounted for about 37% of merchandise revenue and 20% of total company gross profit.
Still a big chunk of profit.
It's a significant exposure that could impact margins if regulations tighten further. Other important regulatory risks pertain to food safety, especially as they grow food service labor laws, data privacy, and environmental regulations governing fuel storage and handling.
Given their history and future plans for M&A, integration risk must be a significant factor. We talked about their success, but the risk is always there, right? Especially with huge deals like Total Energies.
Absolutely. With M&A being such a core component of their growth strategy, Couche-Tard is continually exposed to integration risk. The failure to successfully integrate the operations, systems, and cultures of acquired companies, particularly massive ones like the recently acquired Total Energies network, could lead to not achieving those projected synergies, resulting in higher-than-expected costs, customer disruption, and potential impairment of goodwill. It's a massive undertaking every single time.
And what about changing consumer habits beyond just EVs and food? Are they agile enough to adapt to evolving preferences for things like digital services or different shopping experiences?
That's another key risk. Their success fundamentally depends on their ability to adapt to rapidly changing consumer preferences. A failure to innovate and meet evolving demands for seamless digital engagement, relevant loyalty rewards, convenient delivery services, and healthier, fresher food options could lead to a loss of market share. Furthermore, that strategic pivot to a food service-led model introduces entirely new operational risks related to supply chain management, stringent food safety protocols, managing food spoilage.
Things they didn't have to worry about as much before.
Exactly. These are inherently more complex and higher risk than their traditional convenience model. Finally, while the convenience business has some defensive characteristics, it is not immune to broader economic downturns, which could reduce discretionary spending and travel, leading to lower sales of both fuel and in-store merchandise. And cybersecurity is a persistent and growing concern, given their reliance on extensive IT systems for point-of-sale, supply chain, loyalty programs.
A breach could be devastating.
A significant data breach could result in substantial financial losses, regulatory fines, and severe reputational damage. It's a risk for almost every large company today.
8. Synthesis and key takeaways. The bull versus bear case.
Okay, let's try to synthesize all of this. If we pull it all together, what's the strongest argument for why Couche-Tard is a compelling company? Particularly for an investor or anyone wanting to understand retail innovation and leadership, what's the bullish case here? Well, the bullish perspective is really underpinned by several key factors that make this company stand out. Firstly, their immense global scale. It provides durable cost advantages in procurement and logistics that are incredibly difficult for smaller competitors to replicate. This scale translates directly into a formidable competitive moat. Secondly, they have that proven M&A playbook. A long and extraordinarily successful track record of acquiring and seamlessly integrating businesses, consistently creating significant value for shareholders. And the fragmented nature of the industry, particularly in the U.S., still offers a continued long runway for this consolidation strategy. There's still room to grow by acquisition.
And their financial management and operational prowess certainly contribute to that bullish view, right?
They absolutely do. Management has consistently demonstrated a disciplined and profoundly shareholder-friendly approach to capital allocation. They are adept at flexibly shifting between large-scale M&A, strategic organic investments within their existing business, and returning capital to shareholders through dividends and buybacks, always aiming to maximize long-term value. Their operational excellence is evident in their ability to maintain strong profitability and high returns on capital through various economic cycles. And their skill in effectively managing challenges like inflationary pressures and fuel price volatility speaks volumes about their expertise and resilience.
And from a valuation perspective, considering all these strengths, what stands out to you for the bull case? Is there a hidden opportunity there?
What's fascinating here from a bull perspective is that the stock currently trades at valuation multiples that are broadly in line with its historical averages. So you're not necessarily paying an exorbitant premium for quality. And crucially, it trades at that notable discount to peers like Casey's, the company that has already successfully executed the food-centric model that Couche-Tard is now actively pursuing.
Right.
This suggests that the market may not yet be fully pricing in the potential success of Couche-Tard's own strategic pivot, representing a potential re-rating opportunity and significant upside if they execute well on fresh food, fast, and those loyalty initiatives.
But every strong company has significant challenges and potential pitfalls. What are the biggest headwinds Couche-Tard faces that form the core of the bearish case? What keeps the skeptics up at night?
The most significant headwind is that structural impact from EV adoption, no question. The inevitable long-term decline in gasoline demand represents a fundamental threat to their primary traffic driver and largest revenue source. While the company is investing proactively in EV charging, the profitability and overall traffic generating potential of this new mobility model are still unproven at a broad scale, particularly in North America. This introduces significant uncertainty regarding their core business long term.
And the internal transformation itself, shifting from a fuel-centric model to a food service powerhouse, sounds like a massive undertaking that comes with its own execution risks.
It absolutely does. That strategic pivot to a food service-led model is operationally complex and carries significant execution risk. It requires developing entirely new supply chains, cultivating different labor skills, meticulously managing food waste, all of which fundamentally change the business's risk profile from a traditional model. Additionally, as the company grows larger, finding and executing truly transformative, value-accretive acquisitions becomes increasingly difficult, simply due to the sheer size required for a meaningful impact. And the ongoing integration of the massive Total Energies network will be a major test of their acquisition and integration capabilities on a scale they haven't seen in Europe before. Lastly, that secular decline of the highly profitable tobacco category. It creates a significant margin headwind that the nascent, lower-margin food business must grow substantially just to overcome, let alone drive significant overall margin growth. That's a real challenge to their existing high-margin merchandise mix.
So what does this all mean for someone trying to make sense of this company? What's the ultimate question here for you, the listener, as you consider Couche-Tard's journey?
Ultimately, I think a deep dive into Couche-Tard reveals that understanding this company, or even considering it as an investment, represents a kind of vote of confidence. A vote of confidence in management's exceptional ability to execute a complex, multi-year strategic pivot. The company is clearly not passively waiting for the future of convenience retail. It is actively shaping it through strategic acquisitions, significant investments in new capabilities, and that clear-eyed, ambitious plan for organic growth. Their historical track record of disciplined execution and consistent value creation strongly suggests they are well-equipped to navigate this challenging but potentially rewarding journey. But the path forward is definitely not without significant challenges and uncertainties.
So, you, the listener, must weigh the tangible strength of this elite operator, its proven track record, its scale, its ambitious plans against the undeniable uncertainties of the industry's long-term evolution, particularly that fundamental shift away from traditional fuel. Outro. What stood out to you in this deep dive into Couche-Tard? Perhaps it was their clever profit-in-the-box model, you know, using fuel to drive higher margin in-store sales. Or maybe their ambitious 10-for-the-win strategy, aiming for $10 billion in EBITDA by really focusing on organic growth alongside M&A. Or perhaps it was how they're tackling the EV transition head-on by turning their European sites into a real-world laboratory for future mobility.
Yeah, it really raises an important question for the future, doesn't it? In a world where convenience is king, but the underlying definition of mobility itself is changing dramatically, what future innovations do you think will truly define the next generation of convenience stores? Will the store of the future be much more about bespoke food offerings and diverse services, and significantly less about traditional fuel, completely transforming the space as we know it? Or will there always be a fundamental need for that quick roadside fill-up, no matter the energy source?
That's a great thought to ponder as we move forward in a rapidly changing retail landscape. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this exploration of Alimentation Couche-Tard gave you a clear understanding of a fascinating company right at the forefront of retail evolution. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into a new stack of sources, helping you become truly well-informed. Until next time.